The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Myers.
Good morning. Sorry about the late start this morning. Had a few hours at Providence with a family member. Everyone's going to be okay. But if you have ever gone to an emergency room and you know that it is several hours, and then several hours more, you know, that kind of thing. And finally ended up taking mom home. She's fine now. And it was a good evening, but it was a little bit concerned. And then things kind of cleared up a little bit. This is what happens sometimes. And I was talking with one of the nurses there. And I said, do we have any idea when we might get looked at? And he said, well, we're a small hospital. And they were talking about all their rooms being full. I was looking at the parking lot. It didn't strike me that the hospital was that busy when we showed up. But it did get busier as time went on. But anyway, got mom in the upright locked position. She's good. Mom, you're probably listening too. We appreciate you being there wherever you happen to be. So it was just a late night, getting home late. And so ended up starting the show just a little bit late. Okay. Matt Walsh is going to join me here in about 20 minutes. You know, Matt Walsh probably has, you know, the great beard guy on television, used to work for Reason Magazine. Maybe he still does. I don't know. But he's the guy who came up with the documentary, What is a Woman? Remember that. And he took so much incoming. Well, he's now taking another documentary and putting it into a film form, so to speak. And it's called Am I Racist? And, of course, if you have to ask the question, the answer is yes. You know what I'm getting at in today's weirdness. To even pose the question is to answer it, I guess. But we'll talk with him a few minutes. I'm looking forward to the conversation, because the conversation sure needs to be had, because it is the one, you know, the one card that the left wishes to play over and over and over again, designed to shut you up. Well, I refuse to go there. But anyway, we'll talk with Matt about that here in the next few minutes. One thing I did promise I was going to do over the weekend was to go see the Reagan movie. And I did. And I have to tell you, I don't want to sound like a slobbering fanboy, but you know, for years how I've been saying that the Republican Party needs to ditch the Lincoln Day dinners and completely trash the idea of a Lincoln Day dinner and go with Reagan birthday dinners instead. The Reagan movie yesterday is yet more proof of why Republican parties need to go in that direction. I know that more Republicans are starting to figure out that that Abe Lincoln, under the guise of freeing the slaves, ended up enslaving the nation and the administrative state. I think there are more Republicans that are starting to look at Abe Lincoln this way, some revisionist history, and that it always used to be considerably okay to secede from the Union because it was a voluntary association. You know, we've been kind of inculcated in our government school education that you know, you join the mafia, and then once you join the mafia, known as the United States of America, you can't go anywhere, even though this country itself was born and formed by secessionists. Yes, secessionists. That's, you know, the way it happened. But you know what happens? The secessionists then end up having a new government, and then the new government says that nobody can secede. You know, that's the way that works. So, needless to what you say, Abe Lincoln, if you take a clear-eyed view of the history, it's a mixed record, okay, but he's been turned into a saint. And I've never agreed with Lincoln Day dinners. I don't like doing them because of the, you know, the real history involving Abe Lincoln. So anyway, I'm watching Reagan, and it's so funny. Both Linda and I went to Reagan, went to Cinemark, and we're leaving. And when you know, the first thing she says is, they should be doing, you know, Reagan dinners instead of Lincoln dinners. And I said, honey, I've been saying this for years. You know, that's what she said. And so we're both agreeing. And, you know, and we're watching this Reagan movie, and the sunny optimism that was portrayed. And I'd forgotten a lot of it. There was a lot of that movie. It was a long movie by today's standards, you know, 2 hours, 20 minutes or so. But I loved it from start to finish. And I applauded, and other people applauding at the you know, at the end of it too, as the credits were running. And it was a very good crowd there. Saw Christina Anderson there. One of my Facebook friends was there. He waved across the theater, And it was long, but it didn't feel long because there was an awful lot of history to cover over some 90 plus years of his life. And it was just absolutely well done. There were certainly some things that were done for, shall we say, a dramatic or poetic license. Nancy Reagan was made to be a much more sympathetic character than I think she really was in real life, because Nancy Reagan, God bless her, man, she was a barracuda, man. Anybody was going after Ron Reagan, and she had the teeth out, and she, you know, would get right into it. She was a barracuda, more of a barracuda, I think, than she was portrayed in the movie for real. But other than that, and the other thing, what was also interesting is that neither of the Reagan's later kids involved in there. You know, Ron, the tutu wearing, not part of the Reagan movie, and I understand why. They spent their entire lives hating on their fathers after the fact. But just a great story from start to finish. And there were all sorts of things that I had forgotten about, because in 1980, when Reagan was running, and, well, 1976, he ran, and then Ford ended up beating him and then going down to defeat Jimmy Carter. And there was just a lot of this that had been brought back, the battles between the United States and the evil empire, the way the speeches got written, and all the Cold War machinations. And finally, getting down to some deals here with Gorbachev. And then, of course, the tear down the wall thing. And the most fascinating aspect, I think, of Reagan, along with all the history that came by, is how they told the story with John Voight, great actor. John Voight being a KGB guy, doing the being the minder. Everybody in the United States government would have some sort of minder, someone who is some analyst of some sort that would take their life's work as being the study and studying and getting to know the person and doing what they can to be able to do the best in intelligence job. Because, hey, say what you will, KGB was incredibly thorough the way they were doing things. But I just thought it was a home run, start to finish. The movie could have gone another hour, and I would have been fine. There's a lot of Reagan history that got revisited that I had forgotten about, because 1980, when he was elected, I was 19 years old. Not particularly political in those days. I can't even tell you if I voted in the 1980 election as a poor hardscrabble DJ in Barstow. I don't recall. I don't know if I did. Come to think of it, I just moved into California. I just changed residence in September. I probably hadn't changed my voter registration at that point, from Ohio. I wouldn't have been able to have voted in that. They were actually relatively strict on voting registration in those days, unlike what they're all the hinky that they are trying to do right now. So no, there's no way I could have voted for him in 1980. And was I paying much attention? Oh, I don't know. One of the most, I shouldn't say one of the most, because they were all interesting, but another interesting aspect of the Reagan movie was going back and seeing then how the popular culture demonized him, and there was just so much of it that I had forgotten, like the British puppet series that would parody him as being a doofus, and the MTV music videos, the Land of Confusion, the Genesis song that essentially was a thinly veiled smash at Reagan. I had forgotten, and just, that stuff is almost 40 years ago, 35, 40 years back, right? I had forgotten how much demonization had been going on even then. And boy, I'll tell you, if a Democratic president could ever get half the demonization that every Republican president seems to get, it would be an interesting world, would it not? That is for sure. But you got to go see Reagan. Got to go see Reagan if you have yet to do it. It is well worth the time and well worth the money. 770-563-3770-KMD. If you wanted to join in, Matt Walsh will join me with yet another kind of conservative movie coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll hit that. Some of the headlines we have going on this morning. Damian Mann, I was reading this yesterday afternoon in the Rogue Valley Times. Huge housing complex in downtown Medford makes the third try for state support. Damian's a good reporter, say what you will. But supporters of a long-awaited $50 million low-income housing project near downtown Medford hope that the third time's the charm to get state support. And this would be developed by Rubicon Investments and Edlin and Company has generated enough enthusiasm at the state level to qualify to take part in a pilot program next year, could get $35 million in state grants and federal tax credits. It's a proposed four-story Dolores Huerta Apartments at 723 Central Avenue. Ah, 115 one- to three-bedroom units just north of Les Schwab. This is in the Liberty Park neighborhood, near the Liberty Park neighborhood, 3 1/4 acre property over there. Interesting that that the push is for more low-income housing. Now, does this comport with, or does it actually make sense to be angling for more low-income housing in downtown Medford when you're also trying to make downtown Medford more tourism friendly, and you're looking to make it everything from, you know, here's the multicultural festival, come here downtown, or here's the brew thing, come on downtown, it's Third Friday, come on downtown. Do you really want to go in that direction? Well, that's a serious question, reasonable to ask that. Why would you put low-income housing in downtown Medford with essentially, you know, very few stores? And what stores that you want to are suffering from a bumdom overrun, right? Or might this be part of the, I don't think this is the climate-friendly, equitable community section of town. You'll have to ask Brad Bennington about that. It just seems to be an odd place to, I mean, now I'm not saying that we don't need, you know, low-income housing, but I've always kind of questioned the idea that you're going to take your low-income housing and you're going to stick it downtown, and then you're going to say, we're going to make downtown the tourist mecca. Does that make sense? Maybe we could talk about that. 770-563-3770-KMED. Willamette Week reporting this morning that Measure 118, you know, the one that would raise corporate taxes and then give us all a $1,600 check. That little attempt at universal basic income. It got its first large contribution. Willamette Week reporting that it's a big contribution since qualifying. Dylan Hirsch Schell, a former Tesla engineer who is currently running to be mayor of San Francisco. He's not a resident of Oregon, but puts him in good company. Most of the people that are paying for the signature gathering, putting Measure 118 on the ballot, are not people from around here. Most of them, there's Josh Jones, a Los Angeles investor, and the family and foundation of Gerald Huff, a California software engineer. What is it about California liberals that want Oregon going down the pathway of universal basic income? It couldn't be that we're California's petri dish, right? Let's see what kind of stupid idea can be sold to the rubes, the liberal rubes in California, and that, you know, and then we'll see how that works. And if it works, then California tries it. You know, it used to be that they would screw up California first. Now it appears that the George Soros types, they get together and say, hey, let's screw up Oregon first and see how they do it. And then if for some reason it works, then we'll try it in California. Yeah, you know, I love it. You know, these Tesla software engineers and all the rest of it. You like the idea of raising the corporate taxes? Raise the California corporate tax. Raise it on them. Raise it on your own employer. How about that? Oh, no, we can't do that. Let's screw Oregon. Or, oh, I don't know. Maybe what they're trying to do is hurt Oregon more so that Oregon becomes even less business friendly and California, which has been losing population, and California looks better by comparison. What do you think about that, huh? We can talk about that if you wish. So we have a huge housing complex they want to put down by the Les Schwab, and Californians paying for our of raising our taxes, trying to raise our taxes. How do you like them apples, huh? Interesting story I saw on KOBI the other day. I'm wondering if this is something that Oregon should try. Jurors in Shasta County, according to KOBI, are getting a significant bump in pay for their service. It's going from $15 to $100 a day. Wow. That's actually almost reasonable. Additionally, the pay for the miles driven to and from the courthouse going up from 34 cents a mile to 67 cents a mile makes sense given the price of fuel, especially in California. Shasta County Superior Court is among seven courts taking part in a state pilot program to raise juror compensation. The goal is to increase diversity in juries. And the bill's author says the previously low pay leads to juror dismissals over financial hardship. Yeah, so the juries end up not being representative of the community. Yeah, it's true. You end up getting most juries in many cases made up of people who weren't able to get out of jury duty, right? Get in there. Get in there. A lot of retirees. Nothing wrong with retirees. Maybe someday I'll be one. You know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I get that. You did get something. Maybe that's something California's trying that we should. What do you think about that? This is the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633. And welcome to Monday morning, September 9th.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Deborah.
And this is our TimberTech story.
That's 770-KMED.
655, Matt Walsh joins me here in a few minutes to talk about Am I Racist? The latest attempt, and I think he'll probably be quite successful at this, at tweaking the liberal intelligentsia, because the race card is the last card that I think they have left, right? Race and bigotry, that sort of thing. And all you have to do is just bring that up, and you're supposed to shut up and shrink away and go away. Both presidential candidates from being reported this morning are pretty much in hiding or doing their work, getting ready for the debate tomorrow. Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, should be interesting. We're going to carry it one way or the other. They're not even offering anything officially for radio. I don't care. We're going to air it anyway. And so if you're not by TV, you're not going to be able to watch it. You just go ahead and just tune in tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, and we will be carrying it come hook or crook. We're certainly going to do this, okay? And I'm looking forward to it. The main job for President Trump, though, is that he can be polite for 90 minutes. If he can be polite for 90 minutes and not go off into just ad hominems, I think he will most likely win. We'll just see where this ends up going. Nancy Pelosi, though. Of course, you know Nancy, right? Nancy, your favorite. Everyone's favorite Granny Winebox. She was out reporting, I guess, yesterday? I think she said something right that she knows cowardice and that he's probably not going to show up for the debate. Yeah, you wish, Granny Winebox. You wish. But we'll definitely have it tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, all right? So make sure and be here one way or the other. A story we're going to have to talk more about with Herman tomorrow in the Daily Courier. Josephine County Treasurer condemns threat in draft board order. It's an argument about how much access the Josephine County Finance Director should have information under the purview of the county treasurer. And on Thursday, this went all the way to the Board of Commissioners. The board ultimately stopped short of ordering or attempting to order County Treasurer Eve Arce to give the finance director access to all county financial accounts, including an online portal that R said she doesn't believe county code gives the finance director the right to access. In a phone interview afterward, Arce, who is an elected official, said that she feels the requests are going after my integrity and that because the county has external auditors, she doesn't need the finance director, who's an employee of the Board of Commissioners, auditing her. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how I feel about this. Well, maybe I do, okay? You know what's going on in Josephine County. We've been talking about this with John West, with Herman Bertschiger, and of course, some of the recall is really based on this, is that there are a lot of people who have been in Josephine County for a long, long time, in Josephine County government, whether they're employed by it, or as Arce apparently has been there for quite some time. Was it three decades? I can't help... I don't know. I'll talk more with Herman about this on tomorrow's show. But I can't help but think that there is a bit more of this. I've been here for a long time. No one's going to tell me what to do, especially the county commission, even though the county commission are the elected representatives of the people. And they're going to have to deal with less money coming in. They're having to make some tough decisions in Josephine County. Jackson County in considerably better shape, as we well know. And Josephine's just going to have to be making some cuts, and they're dealing with unions and employees and bad morale and all of these other things. But there is a trend or a tone that I have could not help but note is that, well, the county commission doesn't have anything to say about this. Now, it is true that the treasurer is an elected position, but it's an elected position that's not in a vacuum. It also depends on budgeting coming from the county commission, which the county commission would be in charge of doing, right? So it would seem to me that the wisest way to work this is, I mean, it's kind of like Jackson County Sheriff elected position, but yeah, still, you have to work with the county commission. You don't just say, hey, screw you, county commission. It's not real good, real smart politics. But between, Arce not wanting to be questioned, hey, if your books are in good shape, why would you care if they have a finance director working for the board looking at them too? Two sets of eyes? Wouldn't that be a good thing? I would think so. But I think there's a lot of what's going on in Josephine County is this, we've been here for a long time. I'm in this department. I've been in this department forever. I'm going to be here until the county, when the county commissioners are gone and they replace them with new Democrats. You know, if they end up getting their way, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, we don't have to pay attention to what you guys are saying. And no, the county commission is going to be busting things down. And essentially, it appears that the inmates really do think that they're in charge of the asylum, in my opinion, and what's going on in Josephine County. And the county commission is having to, because of financial issues, is going to have to shape things up a little bit. And I'm thinking this controversy over the treasurer and the county finance director might be another example of that. You know, long-time person, been there a long time. No one's going to tell me what to do. Everybody has a boss, though, at some point. 7 o'clock, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KBXG Grant is where you are. We'll also be talking with Matt Walsh here in the next few minutes.